This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a Wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, Wimpy, Wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a Hefty Ultra Strong trash bag.
Hefty, Hefty, Hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty large black bags.
This is David C. Baker, author of The Business of Expertise, How Entrepreneurial Experts Convert Insight to Impact and Wealth. And you are listening to Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails.
Hello and welcome to this hopefully short-lived series that will be airing in addition to the weekly Marketing Book podcast interviews. I'm your host, Douglas Burdett, and my goal during this unusual time is to reconnect you with past guests on the Marketing Book podcast, share some ideas and inspiration, and maybe a much-needed laugh or two. I've interviewed over 200 authors on the show, and my plan is to continue this series until I either run out of authors or quarantine, whichever comes first. A word of warning, the host and guest may very likely be drinking cocktails during these conversations. I mean, come on, they are recorded during the cocktail hour. To find the show notes for each episode with pictures of each guest and links mentioned in their conversation, visit marketingbookcocktails.com. marketingbookcocktails.com. See what I did there? And if you'd like to join the conversation, email a voice recording to me at douglas@salesartillery.com, and I'll try to include it in a future episode. I'd love to hear from you. Otherwise, connect with me on LinkedIn where we can chat. David C. Baker, welcome to Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails. How are you?
Great. And this is especially wonderful because it's just audio, so I didn't have to change clothes, didn't have to shave, nothing. This is perfect. I love this.
Glad I can accommodate you. And yes, I haven't shaved in over a month, and I've never gone this long without shaving. And
you can't wear a mask unless you shave. That's not safe. That's not safe, my man.
That's right. That's right. Well, nothing is. Yeah. Although yeah. I do have a mask since my son's an EMT. He actually gave Dad a few masks to wear.
All the used ones? He gives you a used one.
Probably, yeah.
He's an old man. Who cares?
Yeah, yeah. And I wear it just to make other people feel better. I don't know that it helps me at all. So, where are you at your farm in Tennessee at this point?
I am.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And you and your wife are doing okay. Please tell me you don't have coronavirus.
I'm doing fine. My wife is type 1 diabetic. She's incredibly healthy, so you wouldn't know it. But because of that, I do all the shopping all garbed up as appropriate. And it's actually pretty easy to do social distancing because we're on 61 acres, so we never see a soul except somebody who's dropping off a package or something. And then I'll go into town once a week or so and either get building supplies or groceries or both, and or liquor too, of course, just stock that up. And those are the only three places I go.
Some internal disinfectant. Yes, that's why here in the state of Virginia, the governor has mandated that the liquor stores must stay open. So
the gun stores too?
Yeah, that's the gun stores too. As a matter of fact, I think the indoor gun ranges are closed.
Okay.
But that's what the outdoors are for, David. So now before we did get started, I saw you there and it looked like you were in some sort of metal working shop. What is that?
It's my woodworking shop. So I don't have an office. I was going to build one and then I discovered, well, I was working in the shop while I was contemplating building one, and I discovered that I just really enjoyed working in the shop. So this is where I work every day. So there's sawdust all over the floor. I don't run the machines while I'm on the phone unless it's a really boring client, and then I'll just run a saw or something and check in with them every 5 minutes and see if they're still droning on and on. But generally, I do work at night or on breaks, and then as in woodworking or metal work as well, lathe work, and then I just work out of here during the day. It's very comfortable. I find it, I don't know, is there something psychologically nice about not being in a pristine office environment for me?
And that's why I think it's important that we have really messy offices rather than pristine offices. So now, for folks that may not recall back to episode 148, which published in November 2017, let me remind them who David C. Baker is. He is an author, speaker, and consultant in the expertise marketplace. He's written 5 books. And is that right? 5 books? No, you're working on your 6th one.
Yeah, it's just not released yet because it's about the worst time in the world to release it. But yeah, five public books and another one coming out soon.
Okay. And while the business of expertise was not specifically just about marketing agencies, you do have an expertise having advised, I last count, over 900 marketing agencies over the years. And you keynote around the world, and you've been your work has been featured in Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Forbes, and the Marketing Book Podcast. Now that's not really on his bio. I just kind of stuck
those
that
are the
in.
Three. Those are the three that mean the most to me.
Thank you.
The Marketing Book Podcast, that was the big one for me. New York Times was okay, but when I got on your podcast, it was like blew me away.
Thank you. Let's just go with that. Let's not refute that. So can you remind? And I should also say that I first learned about you in July. The first week, I think it was, the July of 2001. That was the, and wow. I remember because I started my firm in the beginning of July 2001. And
great timing. You had great timing.
Yeah.
And then you probably launched a whole bunch of stuff in 2008 and 2009 as well. And then you have another stuff.
Yeah. And now I'm on the cusp of another big breakthrough. So that's right. Yeah. 2 months before 9/11, I had no idea. But anyway, a friend of mine in Richmond, Virginia, in the agency business, he goes, oh, you got to check out this guy. He writes the most phenomenal stuff. And I went to your site and I read a lot of it and I downloaded a bunch of your ebooks. And then I would follow you over the years and read your blog. And you always had this great advice. And it was sort of like, yeah, but that doesn't really apply to me because I'm different. And then I saw you speak a couple times at conferences, and then you did a webinar with a friend of mine, Michael Gass, good friend of yours, another agency consultant. And I just thought, man, this guy, I hate him because he's always right about this stuff. And then,
just like your wife.
I don't hate her. Probably like your wife. I think we both kind of married up and grateful. And then one day I got a LinkedIn connection from David C. Baker, and I thought, oh man, I'm going to go buy a lottery ticket. And you said, yeah, I just wrote this book. And so you sent me a copy of it, and I read it, and I thought, damn it, Baker. There's like no daylight left. I read the book about expertise and specialization and all that sort of thing. And I said, all right, I give up. This Baker guy has been haunting me for 15, 17 years. I'm going to do it. I made some changes to my my firm based on it. And so anyway, I've since been able to attend 2 of your conferences in Nashville for agency folks, and really got so much out of that. But why don't you remind folks about the thesis of your book, The Business of Expertise, because it truly is one of my favorites. And I've heard from so many other people who have read it. And in fact, I've got another friend who's been a guest on the show, Todd Hockenberry. He said he's read it like 4 times.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So, and even the New York Times wrote about it. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's one of the weirdest books I've ever written because it didn't turn out anything like I was intending. I was headed down a completely different path. It was going to be a long book, kind of a textbook / reference book, and I was boring myself to death just writing it. And I decided just to step away from it for a couple of days and take it down a different path, one where I just felt very passionate about it. And I was feeling very passionate about the notion of expertise, about pattern matching, about how people develop a very deep expertise primarily because they make decisions about where to focus. And so a lot of, I guess you could really say the book is it's a lot about positioning, how to act like an expert, how to not like act like an expert, and then how the positioning decisions you make give you so much richer opportunities to develop expertise as you notice those patterns, and then how to monetize them. But really, the subtitle is it kind of captures this two-pronged approach, and that's experts are, they're just dying to have a deep impact on their clients, and they really want to monetize that. They want to be wealthy in an ethical way because of their expertise, because they work so hard to develop it. And I just wanted to honor all of the people who are selling their thinking for a living. And so that's what I did. And I had no idea how the book would be received. There were some bumps along the way as I was writing it and so on. But I've been so happy with the impact that it's had on people. It's kind of a short book, a short and expensive book. I guess maybe it should have been long and cheaper. But
well, it's beautifully done, and it's got illustrations. It's really, even the way you had it printed. But remind folks about what is a business that thrives on expertise. So, I mean, marketing agencies is one of maybe, I don't know, 30. And the book really isn't, as a marketing agency person, I was able to read it and completely understand what you're talking about, but it seemed like an architect or an accounting firm or...
Yeah, it's really, you have all these experts in the world, and then you have all these entrepreneurs, and I'm writing to the intersection of those two. So where those two circles, the Venn diagram crosses. So there are a lot of entrepreneurs who are not experts in terms of they're not selling their thinking, and there are a lot of experts who are not entrepreneurs. In other words, they're working for a large institution. They have a safe job. They're not out there taking risks every day. So I'm really writing for people who are in an entrepreneurial setting and selling their thinking. They're standing naked in front of their clients every day and just selling what's in their heads. They're not making things that are tactile that they can sell and put on a shelf. It's ideas. And so a lot of that overlap would typically be called the professional services market. So architects, attorneys, designers, marketers, physicians, interior decorators,
like a consultant
designers,
of any kind?
Yeah, any consultant for sure, and that's what I am. So anybody like that, right, who's in an entrepreneurial setting selling their thinking for a living. And I think of all those people as experts of different kinds. I don't want to minimize, let's say, the craftsman who's building amazing guitars in his basement. I respect that sort of work, but that's not who this is written for. This is written for people who are doing all kinds of research. They are noticing the patterns. They're developing unique perspectives, and they're creating, or they're taking a public positioning that not many other people have. So they are unique in some way. They're driving expertise that very few people want. But those people who want it are losing sleep if they don't get it. They're really desperate for that help.
So you, at least for the, I don't know who else, other communities, but at least for the marketing agency community, in the last few weeks, you've been hosting these very generous webinars where you have been sharing what your thoughts are on what's happening, at least to that expert community. Mm. What's been the reaction to that, and what, at this point, because this we're maybe 5 or 6 weeks into it, and I think you've been doing it for at least a month, what are some of the things that you have observed that you think are in fact gaining traction?
Mm. Well, it's everything about it has been surprising to me. I felt a little frozen at the beginning because I didn't really know if people wanted to hear anything, and then what they wanted to hear, and whether that message should be really different. My own business shut down entirely in the sense that people just put off all of the decisions that they were making. It was fine. That it doesn't hurt me personally. We'll be fine. But so I had all this extra time, and I thought, all right, I'm just going to put a feeler out there and see if people are interested in these topics. So I just kind of gently raised my hand, and my Zoom account is provisioned for 1,000 people to register, and 998. So we just barely almost hit that limit. And every other one has been 750 to 1,000 people. And they have just been crazy soaking it up. And I try to keep them very short, very specific. I'm making predictions. To me, it's an example. So, and it's all free. To me, it's an example of thinking over the long term. So really, if you've been running a firm in this expertise space, then you probably aren't doing anything different right now than what you were doing before, if what you were doing before was the right thing. In other words, you were making decisions for the long term, and now you're still making decisions for the long term. You're having to adjust. Your clients are freaked out a little bit. The work has slowed down. You may have had to make some very tough decisions around staff. But what experts do in times like this is they remind their clients of all the things they have been telling them all along, right? Just don't forget this. Hey, remember this? This is still how you would think. This is how you keep your head on straight. The reaction has been crazy good. After I do every one, I think, do I have another one of these in me? What would it be about? This morning, I'm working around in the shop, and I'm trying to think of, is there another webinar I should do? And the idea hit me, and I got very excited about it. So I know I'm going to do at least one more. And as long as people keep listening, then I'll keep doing them. I enjoy the opportunity. I don't enjoy doing webinars. I actually hate doing webinars, but I enjoy the opportunity to be of some service to my audience. I appreciate that.
Why is it you don't like webinars?
Because I feel like I'm speaking to nothing. You know, I love speaking.
Well, maybe when I'm listening in, yes.
Yeah. Well, I love speaking to large crowds. The larger, the better. Like 5,000 people live on TV. I just love that. I feel so comfortable doing it. But
well, where there's feedback.
Yeah, right. But in a webinar, you're just talking to yourself. And I have my producer in the same room sometimes, and that tends to help. Mm-hmm. And he'll nod kindly if I say something that he thinks will resonate. But
well, Marcus is a very kind person. So.
He is. He's like kinder than I am, in fact. Yeah, so webinars I find very difficult to do just because there's just no immediate feedback.
Right. Well, I think that the first time you did it, people just needed to hear from somebody, which may have been the spike. Yeah, they needed to hear from...
It's somebody else alive. Like, right. Yeah, they're scanning the radio waves to see if any stations are still playing something. Right.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So what do you think that folks should be thinking about or doing, other than what you just said about sticking to their knitting? Do you think that there's something that... Well, let me back up for a second. I remember once when I lived in New York City, and we went to St. James Episcopal Church, and there was an assistant rector there, and he said, "I love funerals." And I said, "Why do you love funerals?" And
this is why he was the assistant, right?
Right. And Well, he went on to, yeah. Well, actually, he and his wife were both the assistant rectors, and then I think they went back to Maine. But great folks, and I remember him. I was surprised when he said that. He said, "I love the funerals because that's the best chance I have at breaking through and reaching everybody that's attending. Right. They're in a new state of mind. They're reflective. And it almost makes me wonder if a lot of people are experiencing a similar thing, not because of a death of a loved one, but they're rethinking everything. And they're... For a brief moment, their heads are up, and they're thinking, why are we doing that? What could we do? Do you sense anything like that with some of the companies that you're in touch with?
A lot of them are, well, there's a divide. You can tell a difference based on whether somebody went through the 2008 and 9 mess or whether they didn't. And if this is the first one they've gone through, they're definitely freaking out to a greater degree than if they've already been through this before, whatever that was 12 years ago. So that's a difference. What I find refreshing is not the right word, because there's so much pain out there. It's so difficult to watch. But what I find refreshing, if I can use that word, is that the truth surfaces in so many places during a time like this. You find out what leaders are made of. You find out who on your staff is a selfish loser and who is a really big picture thinker who is selfless. You find who can be calm in the storm. You find out what your clients are made of. All of a sudden, you discover all the things that you were doing or were paying for that really were not necessary. They were just fluff.
Yep.
You discover all of the services that you have that, and so many of them are just pure nonsense. You just go back to the basics. And that's what I love about a time like this, because it's just a resetting across the board. And I wish it could happen otherwise. But as humans, we usually don't come to our senses outside of crises every once in a while. So I don't like the pain it causes, but I do like the fact that there's so much truth surfacing everywhere.
Yeah, well, it seems like success is the worst teacher.
Well, yeah. I don't remember many of the lessons I learned during successful periods. I sure remember the lessons I learned during the failure. You know, those are just very fresh in my mind the rest of my life. Absolutely.
So, David, you have a podcast that I have listened to every single episode of.
Wow.
And
you must have very little to do in your life.
Well, look at me. I'm doing this daily series now.
Obviously, you're speaking with me again.
Yes, that's right. Without you having written that, released that next book, which we're going to talk about. But it's a very popular podcast, particularly with, well, I guess mainly marketing agency people. And apparently, I think you said that you go around the world and people will say, oh, yeah, I listened to it. Tell us what the name of the podcast is and it's the name's derivation.
Sure. So it's called Two Bobs. My name is David. My partner's name is Blair. So neither of us are named Bob, but he and I, over our entire careers, we've always been compared individually to that movie Office Space, where, you know, you had the two consultants named Bob. It's a kind of an underground cult movie. I'm sure you've seen it.
Office Space, yeah. And they say, yeah. I have the whole thing memorized, so let me just share with you. He says, what would you say you do here?
Right, yeah. Or, I'm going to need you to come in on Saturday right. Or fill out your TPS reports. The acting is terrible. The screenplay is terrible.
Oh, one of my favorite movies.
But yeah, so anyway, that's where the name Two Bobs comes from. And we have been... We haven't been doing it nearly as long as you have. Yours is weekly, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So ours
and daily for hopefully a short time, as long as the authors are in quarantine.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah. So we've only done about 80 episodes. I think we release a new episode every 2 weeks, and it's about a 35-minute conversation. We don't have any guests. We just pick a topic, and then I'll interview Blair on that one, or he'll interview me on one. The ones where he interviews me are always much more interesting and intelligent and cogent, but I'll interview him. So you want to skip all the ones where – no, I'm just kidding.
Well, now, wait a minute, because I remember there was an episode not too long ago where, if I'm not mistaken, he was taking the lead, and this is Blair Ends, who wrote The Win Without Pitching Manifesto, and he's got a more recent book on brilliant book on pricing.
Right.
But he said, David, today I'm going to talk about one of my favorite subjects. And you said, oh, yourself?
Yeah. It's pretty easy. He never thinks another step ahead, so I can usually be one step ahead of him.
Yeah. And so, you know, your relationship with him reminds me very much of the relationship my older brothers have with me, which is somewhat – and you're an oldest child, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
So, you know, it's abusive. But I can relate to that. And I think that, you know, Blair does need to be put in his place. And I think there's no one better suited to that than you.
Yeah, I'm glad to do it.
So, thank you. The logo for the podcast is a red stapler. Of course.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I have really enjoyed that. And I hope you guys don't stop, because I heard that you all were just going to do it for like 100 episodes.
That's right. We haven't decided what we're going to do after that. Maybe we'll do something different with the same podcast, or I don't know. We've got some time to figure it out.
Okay. Well, I hope you don't stop it anytime soon. Now, tell us, you've got another book coming out, and if I'm not mistaken, I got an advanced look at what might be the cover of it.
Yes. It's called Secret Tradecraft of Elite Advisors. That's the title, and the subtitle is Covert Techniques for a Remarkable Practice. So this is a deep insight. So picture this male or female, let's say a female grizzly consultant who'd been doing this for 40 years and just amazing. And then you have a 25-year-old who's just graduated from Harvard and wants to be like this person someday.
Mm-hmm.
And Elaine's been taking notes all these 40 years about all the secrets and the tricks for her being as successful as she has. And then she decides to retire early, and she hands this handwritten book to the new guy, and that's what this book is intended to be. All the secrets for a successful consulting practice. So it's down in the weeds. How do you get people to listen? Where does the power come from? How available should you be? How do you engage clients? How do you think about charging? So it's a real, it's a hands-on sort of, I don't know, like a spy's handbook, all the secrets of the trade. That's the next book.
Mm.
And it's done. But it's a bad time to release it, so that's coming later.
Well, maybe, but I had an interview scheduled with Martin Lindstrom a couple of weeks ago about his new book called The Ministry of Common Sense.
Mm.
Brilliant.
That's a great title.
You're going to love that. You're going to love it. It's about how it's about the death of common sense in organizations and how it has ruined it for a lot of companies, their employees, but most importantly, their customers.
Yeah.
And he then advocates setting up an internal ministry of common sense. So having seen as many companies as you have as a consultant, you'll probably laugh or cry when you see it. But it's been moved off till it was going to be this June. It's been moved off at this point till January, but it's definitely going to be worth the wait. So you're not the only one that's maybe holding off on releasing a book.
Yeah, I mean, Amazon decided that they would basically quit shipping books. They're still selling Audible and Kindle, but the physical books are basically not shipping because they've got other more important things to ship to people. So yeah, I think a lot of people are on hold. That's interesting. That the title, I've walked out of so many Fortune 1000 companies just shaking my head in the parking lot thinking, how in the world did we become such a powerful economic nation with these idiots running these companies? I just don't quite get it. So yeah, I like the idea.
That is exactly the answer that his book is.
Oh yeah. Okay. Good.
So you're
it's needed.
Yeah. You're going to, I think you particularly would really enjoy it. And I say that because with the number hundreds or maybe over 1,000 firms that you've consulted with, it's amazing to me the way you zero in on what prompts action and decisions. And I'll give you an example. Mm. You said that one of the things that prompts like an agency owner to reach out to you is their lease.
Right.
Explain the connection there that I would have never thought of.
Yeah, I noticed something and I couldn't quite figure out what it was, but in the middle of many of these conversations, I discovered that their lease was up for renewal in 6 to 9 months, something like that. And I knew that was the case with many of these people calling me, but it took me a while to figure out why that was relevant. And it turns out, as I thought about it some more, that's the only long-term commitment they were making to their businesses. So they'd go to work every Monday and work for 5 days, have a weekend, then repeat, rinse and repeat. But they never made any long-term commitment to their business except when they signed a facility lease, which in some parts of the country was 10 years. You know, if you were in New York, if other parts of the country, it might have been 3 or 5. And so at that moment, they became introspective. Do I want to do this for another 3 to 5 or 10 years? And if I do, what changes do I need to make? And that's what prompted them to reach out and ask somebody on the outside for a different perspective on things.
Interesting. And I thought about that recently because We renewed our lease years ago, I guess for 3 years or something like that. And then it just went year to year. And then now for almost the last 2 months, the place has been empty.
Really? Because everybody's working at home,
everyone's
right?
Working at home. I think they just wanted to get away from me, but that's not important, yeah. David. Anyway, it's empty. And so the lease runs out at the end of August. And I said, well, I'm not sure I can really plan ahead here. And everyone seems to be really comfortable working from their houses now, right. A little too comfortable, actually. And so I told the landlord about a week ago, I said, hey, we got to let it go. We've been there for 16 years. You know, I'm not going to come back. But for me, it became an example of, well, why were we doing this? I mean, we're all local. I still want to get everybody together as soon as we can on a regular basis. And if we need more space in the future, we're going to get it. But it was and then also certain subscriptions, you know, like software subscriptions we had, we weren't using. And I'm just like, you know, I guess maybe it is kind of time to clean house here and review what we're thinking about and what really seems to matter. Can you say more though about what you mentioned earlier about you can really tell about your employees and your clients what they're really made of? I guess I'm thinking particularly your employees. I mean, do you find that some companies are suddenly realizing these people just don't maybe weren't a good idea in the first place?
Some of them, especially ones who were growing quickly, and so they fell into that very common trap of dropping their standards just a little bit because they felt this pressure to keep up with the needs of their growing client base. And so they would just bring people on board without checking quite as carefully, and then they wouldn't give them as much time to get up to speed, but they would throw them behind enemy lines faster than normal so they couldn't absorb the culture. And they're discovering that some of those people sort of slipped through the cracks. I don't mean to imply that these firms are discovering that their people aren't as good as they thought. What they're discovering is that some people are better than they thought and some people are worse than they thought. There's very little middle ground. When you are faced with one of my clients had to lay off 38 of 40 people, the only two people left are the partners. Other people haven't had to lay anybody off. But if you're one of those firms that have had to furlough employees, you have to make a very important judgment call about who's worth keeping and who isn't. Those are the kinds of clarifying decisions that you don't face most every day. And so you start paying attention to the evidence in a different way than you used to. And you start to see, all right, who usually you do it across two axes. One is, do they fit the culture or do they not fit the culture? And then do they contribute really significantly or is it just more on an average level? And some of the people in the past who were very good, heavy contributors, but who didn't fit the culture, you're starting to decide, I'm not sure I really want to keep them around. And it's just like all these other decisions you're making, it's just clarifying just to see what's really happening. Who's adaptable? Who goes the extra mile? Who understands that you are in a very difficult position and that you're forced to make decisions before clarity emerges in the fog, right? And they give you some space, they give you some extra rope to make mistakes along the way. It's wonderful to see how you have some really, really good people working for you and then some others who aren't.
Yeah. Have you seen examples of companies that are suddenly doing the right thing or doing things well in light of what's going on here? We don't need to go through all the examples of companies that, like my power company, that's sending me an email saying, thank you for paying your bill. We're here for you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, the ones who I think are doing really well are the ones who were doing the same thing before this. So they already had a connection with their audience, and now there's no reason they can't continue that connection with their audience, which is so different from some firms who would send out a little newsletter every Christmas or something, and now they're sending out, suddenly they're finding the time to write all these silly emails about what we've learned about how to work from home effectively, or we are here for you, or we're in this together. It's like, come on, people. If this is just a ploy to tell us, please send us work, right? There was a local company here that's out of the field I address, but they had a great ad. I thought before COVID-19 hit the world, Nashville was hit with a tornado.
Oh, that's right.
And this construction company said something, I don't remember exactly what they said, but something like, we were mercifully spared any serious damage from the tornado. And that leaves us in a place where we can help you. If you would like to talk about that, just let us know. So they acknowledged what was happening. They were generous and empathetic, and
sounds like they were grateful.
They were grateful, and they weren't desperate about things. So overall, I think the firms that I work with, they're running marketing, digital, creative firms, I think they're doing a good job in general. It seems like that. The larger consumer marketplace, I would give it a pretty big fail in almost every case. There are some firms that are doing really well, but a lot of them are just tone deaf. I'm really surprised at it.
Have you seen that video compilation of all the different coronavirus ads companies are running and how similar they are?
No, I haven't. Oh, that'd be interesting to see.
It's brutal. Bob Hoffman wrote about it in his newsletter. Bob Hoffman, the ad contrarian, a previous guest on the Authors in Quarantine. Well, one of the first guests on Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails. I mean, just you can imagine he had to go to the front of the line.
Right.
And he's actually a member of the Marketing Book Podcast Three Timers Club. Just putting that out there, David, you know, to kind of give you some goals, because I know
goals in my life. I really do need goals. I have no goals in my life. So I thank you for providing that to me.
Well, although you've written so many books, I guess I could just go back and interview you about a few more.
Yeah, here's a goal for you. Read some of my earlier books.
Right. And then once you become a member of the Marketing Book Podcast Three Timers Club, you will get discount coupons to any Old Country Buffet in the Murfreesboro, Tennessee area.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. That sounds like an interesting video, though. Yeah, isn't it interesting? It's like, where are these people getting? Do they have this late night club where they all share ideas and then, like lemmings, they all do the same thing? Now, there's exceptions, right? Some companies, I think, are doing a good job, but it's pretty pathetic in general. It's obvious, right? As soon as the water starts to sink a little bit, you start to see what's right underneath the surface. And what's right underneath the surface is not a lot of good thinking around marketing. I'm sure you see this with your clients all the time.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, Bob was going in the same direction as what you just said. He talked about how there is, and I realize, I mean, you, Bob, I, we're all people who had, you know, agency backgrounds from a few years ago, and he thinks there's a rather shallow bench now in the agency world. And you would know better than I that it seems like the agency world is a bit of an identity crisis, at least the ad agency world. Am I right?
You are right. It depends on what we're talking about. If we're talking about the big holding companies,
yeah, like the ones I used to work for. I mean, it was really the 800-pound gorilla, and mm-hmm. it just seems like they're a shadow of their former selves. Even Martin Sorrell was, I mean, his whole empire has changed dramatically.
Yeah, it's one of the worst stocks you could buy these days, and that was true before this hit. So there's going to be, it wouldn't surprise me if there are at least one, maybe two of those who are sold to the big digital or the big consulting or the big accounting firms, because the stock will be so cheap, it'll be pretty easy to do it. And then you look at the larger private firms in the 100 to 500, and they're still doing well and doing very good work. And then you have the even smaller firms, the ones that I typically work with, 100 or smaller people. And it's kind of a mix because the barrier to entry is still so low that pretty much anybody can start a firm. And nobody who knows a lot about marketing and went to school for that ever had a course on the business side of it. So there's a real mixed bag there about how well some of them actually run their businesses, for sure.
Mm. Well, we will include a link to that video in this episode's show notes at marketingbookcocktails.com. That's right, David C. Baker. I sprung for a new URL just for this section of our website.
Well,
you know,
$8. Wow, you're a big spender.
Oh, wait, I think I paid 12. All right. See, you see the value that David C. Baker provides to agency people? He's now, after we stop recording, he's going to tell me where I can get $8 domains instead of 12. Right. And where, what's the website where folks can get reacquainted with your work? You write quite often.
Sure. So most of that weekly writing is at davidcbaker.com. And then if people want to learn more about the book, it's expertise.is.is.
And we'll include links to all that. And I'm also going to include a link to that interview on the Marketing Book Podcast because, you know, that's kind of where it all started happening for David C. Baker. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. That's where it all started going downhill, I think. Right. So, David, I really appreciate the opportunity to reconnect with you and have the listeners reconnect with you. And I hope that you and your wife and your family continue to stay safe and healthy and sane.
Thank you. Good to be on the podcast again, even though it's a different one with a cheap URL. But thank you for the invitation. I appreciate it.
Oh, I want to be where the hot dogs are deep fried. That's the reason Elvis died in Tennessee.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.